हरिः ओम् तत्सत् श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः हरिः ओम् ॐ सदाशिवसमारम्भाम् व्यासशङ्करमध्यमाम् अस्मदाचार्यपर्यन्ताम् वन्दे गुरुपरम्पराम् श्रुतिस्मृतिपुराणानाम् आलयम् करुणालयम् नमामि भगवत्पादशङ्करम् लोकशङ्करम् शङ्करम् शङ्कराचार्यम् केशवम् बादरायणम् सूत्रभाष्यकृतौ वन्दे भगवन्तौ पुनः पुनः ॐ हरि ओम् तत्सत् श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः हरिः ओम् ॐ श्रीपरमात्मने नमः ॐ ध्यानयोगो नाम षष्ठोऽध्यायः Let us read from the verse 7. Jitātmanah prashāntasya paramātmā samāhitah śītoṣṇa-sukha-dukkheṣu tathā mānāpamānayoḥ. So here we saw Jitātmā, the one who has mastery over his body, mind, sense complex, one who has mastery over his ways of thinking, one who has mastery over his desires, emotions, such a person alone can be a tranquil-minded person, prashantaha, the disturbance-free, agitation-free-minded. And only for such an agitation-free, disturbance-free, the turbulence-free-minded, the tranquil-minded person, the Shastra study results in the vision of the reality. Shastra, the knowledge he has gained through Shravanam Mananam becomes true for him. In the sense, for him the reality becomes revealed, reality becomes evident to him. And he does not, as Esther explained very clearly, he does not need to go in search of the reality. For him, reality, Vedanta Shastram does not bring him a new experience of something. Shastra study does not give him a new experience of the reality. Shastra study only helps him recognize the reality which he is already experiencing, not paying attention. The thing is, already we are experiencing the reality. We do not recognize the reality in spite of all the time experiencing the reality. The non-recognition of reality while experiencing the reality is because of the lack of attention towards the reality. So all that the Vedanta Shastram does is turns the attention from the vrittihi to the awareness, the consciousness. For this person, this prepared-minded person, for him Shastram works, which means the truth becomes evident. He sees the truth as the invariably present consciousness in all the variable thoughts of all his experiences, such as Shitam, Ushnam, experience of cold, experience of heat, experience of pain, pleasure, honor, dishonor. All these are experiences. In all his experiences are nothing but the vritti, in the form of vrittis, and he is able to recognize all the vrittis are changing. The changing vrittis, what is unchangeably, what changelessly, what is there is the consciousness, awareness, which he sees that. He recognizes the reality. That is why we never say, you know, recognition of the truth. Suppose you're all sitting here in front of me and I say hello to you. You know, sometimes I come in, I sit here, you know, and then before you get up and go, oh, namaste. If I say, what you say? I've been sitting in the whole class. You're saying hello, namaste, hello to me now, which means I saw you, I experienced you, but did not recognize you. Why I didn't recognize you? In spite of seeing you sitting in the corner, seeing means in spite of your being in front of me, in spite of my eyes being very clear, why I missed you? Lack of attention. So here we do not, the paying attention is recognizing, recognizing what is already there. So Vedanta helps, Shastram helps the tranquil minded person who has mastery over his senses and mind to recognize the reality which he is always experiencing in all his experiences. Okay. And as I said, we'll read the next verse also. Jnana vijnana triptatma. Jnana vijnana triptatma. Kotastho vijitendriyah. Kotastho vijitendriyah. Yukta ityuchyate yogi. Yukta ityuchyate yogi. Samaloshtashma kanchanaha. Samaloshtashma kanchanaha. Here, such a person is the one who revels in the vision of the fullness, one who has the greatest luxury of reveling in the vision of fullness as the very nature of one's own self. The travelling in fullness, nirivil telitale tripti, melana tripti. So this verse says, tripta atma, no, absolutely satisfied. The person whose mind is absolutely free from sense of inadequacy, sense of smallness, sense of limitations, sense of insecurity centered on I. Why? Because that is where he revels in fullness. That is when he revels in fullness. Which means he has resolved his I sense in the awareness. So when does he resolve his I sense? When he resolves his I sense means he does not see anything else other than consciousness as the truth of I. There's no I other than consciousness for him. For him, consciousness is the truth of I. Conscious I for him is consciousness, not the thought, not the mind, not the intellect, not the physical body. For him, I is what? Consciousness. But that is vijnanam. Not only for him the consciousness is the truth of I, he sees there is no truth is consciousness, and the I for him is consciousness. There is no second thing, there is no second truth other than consciousness. There is no second thing other than consciousness. There is no second truth other than consciousness. There is no second thing other than consciousness. You have to see, understand the difference when I say this. Which means for him, all that is here is only consciousness. That vision is called vijnanam. But initially, he recognizes consciousness, first of all, for him, I means only the physical body, initially. And that's a big shift for him. What is the cognitive shift? That I, no, not just the body. The individual is not just the physical body. isn't it? Not even the subtle powers, not even the mind. And he goes, what cannot be negated as an object finally? Even the vrittis, the thoughts, all the cognitions, experiences, everything he negates as the thoughts. What is finally non-negatable is the pure awareness. Abadhitam is satyam, isn't it? What cannot be negated as consciousness? How long can he go negating? Oh, not this. Consciousness. Therefore, when he sees, understands consciousness as the truth, recognizes consciousness being distinct from the vrittis, the thoughts, in all the experiences, in all the changing thoughts, he recognizes the unchanging, the invariably present consciousness. He sees the consciousness as part of the individual, that is jnanam. Recognition of consciousness itself is jnanam. Thereafter, he recognizes the consciousness as the truth of I and resolves the I sense in consciousness, thereby resolves the individuality in totality. And he sees the consciousness as the only truth, and he sees the consciousness as the secondless reality, that is vijnanam. Isn't it? That's what? Jnana vijnana tripta atma. Such a person is kutastaha. I am repeating it because just to take you to this verse again. Such a person alone, kutastaha, means one who remains strong like an anvil, which is not afflicted by any amount of hammering it has. How many ever hammerings you get, still you can remain strong. Which means what? No hammering affects the anvil, which is iron, isn't it? Similarly, this person, there's nothing which can shock him, nothing which can affect him, because of his objectivity, because of his non-internalization, for him everything is mithya. Therefore, such a person, he is what? Kutastaha. Kutastaha means the strongest person, unshaken, unshakable by any of the situations in life. No, he becomes the greatest shock absorber. Which means what? Not simply absorbs, he is not afflicted at all by anything. Kutastaha. And he is Vijita Indriyaha. One who has absolute mastery over his senses, mastery over his mind, mastery over all his body, mind, sense complex. Which means, see, Vijita Indriha, we use the word Vijita Indriha to mean a karma yogi also. The karma yogi who lives a life of karma yoga also, but as a result of living a life of karma yoga, in due course of time, becomes the one who has certain mastery over his ways of thinking, mastery over his senses, mastery over his desires, emotions. He has relative mastery. As a wise person, he has absolute mastery. Vijitendriyaha, Vijita Indriyaha means one who has perfect mastery over his body, mind, sense complex. Which means what? Having mastery means he has conquered them, means his fullness, his happiness is not dependent on fulfillment of any of those needs. Isn't it? Therefore, Vijita Indriyaha. His absolute mastery he has over them. Then, that is explained further. Such a person alone is said to be Yuktaha iti uchyate. He is said to be Yuktaha. The absolutely integrated, the man of integrated personality, which means he is a wise person. A karma yogi is also said to be yuktaha, but here yuktaha means he is a man of wisdom. Yuktaha iti uchyate, and he, yogi, such a person, samaloshta ashma kanchanaha. the one in whose vision all are the same. Here, samaha means equal. The one in whose vision all are one. What are one? Loshtam means a clod of mud or clay. Mud is loshtam. Ashma, stone, a piece of rock. Kanchanam, gold. For him, all of them are of the, what is, something has some value, something is valued, no, has no value at all, and gold is highly valuable. Now, their value, they are how valuable each one is. The clod, this mud has no value. Ashma, no values, least valuable. But still gold is highly valuable. But for him, samaloshtashma kanchanaha means he sees them, all of them are same for him. The one for whom the least valuable, the most valuable, the unvaluable, all of them are same means, what does it mean here? Be very careful here. The wise person is not a dud. When you call him wise person, so he understands the relative difference between gold being most valuable, and you know, the stone being non-valuable, or clay being, you know, of some use. He does not deny the difference between all of them. Relatively, they are all different. One is more valuable, one is less valuable, one has no value at all. Doesn't deny the differences. Relatively, he accepts the differences. But what he says, he does not think all of them are the same. No, doesn't say that. For him, in his vision, all are one. Gold also is absolutely, what is the substance of the gold or clod or rock? Substantially, all of them are one. Relatively, you know, empirically, they have what? Difference as more valuable and less valuable. This is his understanding. It's called samaloshtashma kanchanaha. One more thing we have to remember here. He is not dependent. He knows whether it's a gold or a clay or the stone. Why he, for him, he sees all of them are the same? Because the truth of everything is one and the same truth, and he is not dependent on, for him nothing is more valuable, nothing is less valuable. Why? Because nothing can make him happy, nothing can make him unhappy also. For the one who is already reveling in fullness, one who is not dependent on anything external for his happiness and security, for him it is not, there's no difference. So samaloshtashma kanchanaha. Relatively, empirically, they are different. Definitely, the one is superior, one is inferior. Absolutely, all are one and the same reality. They are mithya. More valuable, relatively more valuable, most valuable gold also is mithya. Relatively least valuable stone also is mithya. Valueless stone also is mithya. Relatively least valuable clod of, you know, the mud also is mithya. Understand? Relatively all of them are, the differences are there. One can be more valuable, less valuable. He doesn't deny them, but all are not, he doesn't say all are equal. But definitely all are one. How can you say gold and clay are one? Gold and clay are equal. If you take the gold, get money. If you take the clod, we won't get anything. Therefore, they are not equal. They are different, definitely. But this difference is only relative. Substantially, they are one. Empirically, they are different. Empirically, they differ in value. But still, they are all mithya. They are not Satyam. From the standpoint of Satyam, all of them are mithya. and they are not sources of happiness. Neither the most valuable gold is a source of happiness, nor the least valuable clod of mud is a source of unhappiness. Therefore, for him, the one who revels in happiness, everything is the same. What is most valuable for you? Anything which can make you more happy, which can make you feel more secure, is more valuable. Why do you give more value to gold? Gold can get you more money. More money you own, the more gold you have, more secure you feel, the better asset for you. What is it for? Ultimately, what do you seek through that? Happiness. That is, this person who already revels in happiness, for him, everything is mithya. Relatively different in values, but still they are mithya. And nothing is a source of happiness there. That is understanding. Now, Suhrun Mitraryudasina Madhyasthadvesha Bandhushu. Suhrun Mitraryudasina Madhyasthadvesha Bandhushu. Sadhushvapichapapeshu Samabuddhir visishyate Suhrun mitraryudasina Madhyasthadvesha bandhushu Sadhushvapichapapeshu Samabuddhir visishyate The previous verse we saw, for the jnani, the wise person, who has the vision of the truth being consciousness, and who sees the consciousness as the very swarupam of one's own self, who sees the consciousness as the only truth of the whole, thereby one who has resolved his identity, you know, in consciousness, when he resolved his individuality in totality, thereby one who revels in the fullness, such a person, being free from sense of inadequacy and insecurity, he is not dependent on anything in the world for his happiness or security. Understand? When you revel in fullness, you don't lack anything. The person who lacking and fullness cannot coexist, isn't it? Where there is fullness, there cannot be inadequacy. Where there is no inadequacy, there cannot be lacking. There won't be needs. Therefore, this person who revels in fullness, being free from inadequacy, being free from lacking, is not dependent on anything in the world for his happiness or security. So, first he sees everything as what? No, everything as the same, everything as mithya. Even though relatively they are more valuable or less valuable, all of them are the same for him. Why? Because all are one for him. First, in the previous verse we saw, he sees all the non-living inanimate things as one. Now, in this verse he says, not only he sees the all different non-living things, inanimate things as one, he also sees the living beings, especially human beings, who are different in nature. He is all of them as one. That is what is said in this verse. In the jnani's vision, all are one. All are one. How he says, Suhrut. Suhrut. We have to split it. Suhrun. When you split it, Suhrut means a well-wisher. A well-wisher means one who is naturally of the, naturally a well-wisher. of anybody, a stranger or a known person, unknown person. One is well-wisher of everybody, and that is his nature. One who wishes well naturally, everybody, irrespective of whether the person is known to him or unknown to him, Suhrut. Then Mitram. Mitra means a friend. He is a well-wisher of only those who are friends. The known people. Well-wisher of the known people is, if a friend. Mitra means friend. A friend means, so he is a well-wisher because you are known to him. Whereas a Suhrut is a well-wisher whether you are known to him or unknown to him. That is his very nature, Swabhava. Swabhavataha hitaishi. Naturally, he wishes well. Everybody, known or unknown. So, Mitram, a friend who is a well-wisher of the known people. Then, Udasinaha. Udasinaha is the one who is an indifferent person. Indifferent person means what? Indifferent means the one who does not side, any of the groups, any of the two, suppose the two people or two groups, he does not side people of any group, does not side any one person. Doesn't side this person or that person, doesn't support this person or that person. One who does not seek support any of the people, anybody, one who does not seek any help also from anybody. Indifferent. Non-supportive, non-seeker of help. He's an indifferent person. Is Udasinaha. I don't support you, I don't support you. I don't care between something happens between you. Okay, and then I don't join any of you. I don't expect any help from both of you also. Which such a person is called Udasinaha. Then Madhyastaha. This Madhyastaha is the one who is a well-wisher of two people who are involved in any arguments or disputes. The mediator. The one who does the job of a mediator. And he is the well-wisher of both the people, the persons involved in any argument or dispute. He is vivadamanayoho hitaishi, well-wisher of both people. He is called madhyastaha. Whereas dveshyaha, one more word we left in between. Suhrun mitra arihi. I left one word in between. Suhrun mitram mitra ari. Arihi means enemy. The arihi enemy need not be in front of you. He is somewhere, but still he is not somebody whom you like. Enemy is arihi. So, Udasinaha, the indifferent person, the non-supporter of anybody, non-seeker of help from anybody. Then, Madhyastaha, the well-wisher of people of the two groups or two people who have any disputes or problems. Madhyastaha, then Dveshyaha. Dveshaha means Dvesha Yogyaha, one who really deserves hatred means what? One who provokes hatred. When you see him, he provokes the very sight of him, or one whose behavior provokes hatred in you. Such a person is called Dveshaha. Isn't it? You see him, you feel so much of hatred comes in your mind. He is called Dveshaha. Such a person, the person of the behavior which provokes hatred. Dveshyaha. Virkatahandavan. Then, Banduhu. Bandhu is the one who's related through family. Related to through family is Bandhu. Then Sadhu. Sadhu means the righteous person. Literally Sadhu means a sannyasi also. Here Sadhu literally means a good person, a pious person, a righteous person. A straightforward, noble person is Sadhu. Doesn't need to be sannyasi. Any righteous person. Then Papaha. Papaha means, the non-righteous wrongdoer. In Adharmi is a Papaha. So righteous person, a pious righteous person, or a non-doer, a wicked person, or the person whose relation through family, related through family, one who provokes the hatred, and one who's, one who tries to be a mediator between two people, being the well-wisher of two people, or one who is indifferent to anybody, and one who is enemy, and one who is friend, and one who is generally a very good-natured person, one who wishes well, everybody, the well-wisher of all the people, known or unknown, such a person. We have people of these types in the society, isn't it? So in all of them, samabuddhihi visishyate. The wise person sees all of them as one. For him, all are same. All are same. Samabuddhihi means, in his perception, all are the same. One is not superior, other is not inferior, one is not desirable, other one is not undesirable, one is not favorable. All of them are same in his perception. In his, what does it mean here? Does a jnani take the righteous person and a non-righteous person, both of, how can a jnani see both righteous and non-righteous as the same? How can both be the same? You must say he's wrong, he's right, he's a bad, he's good. He should say that. Yes, he sees the badness of one person, goodness of another person, righteousness of one person, non-righteousness of other person. He does see the difference. For him, all are not equal. All are not equal. He does see the relative differences. Relatively, they're all different. But absolutely, they're all non-different. He does not see them as equal. He does not say all are equal. All are not equal, but all are one. All are not equal, but all are one. Which means, for him he knows what is Satyam. And other than Satyam, everything else is Mithya. Goodness, the good person. Badness, the bad person. Righteousness, righteous person. Wrong person, wicked person. For him, everything is Mithya here. Mithya. But he does understand, all are not equal. Relatively, there is different. Righteous person is different from the non-righteous. The udasinaha, the indifferent one, is different from the mediator who has interest in the well-being of both the people. Definitely, enemy is different from another person, with friend. Definitely, suhrud, well-wisher of all the people, is definitely different from other people. Everyone is different from every other person. He does not deny the relative difference between all these people. Does not deny that inequality in all of them. They are not equal, but one thing he knows, all are one. All are mithya. The truth of all of them is one and the same reality. Why he, again one more thing, one can see everything as the same only when you are not dependent on anybody or anything, any situation for your happiness or security. An important thing, I tell you one thing. Dependence, emotional dependence, is expression of insecurity. Dependence is expression of insecurity. And this jnani is absolutely free from insecurity. Therefore, he is free from dependence. Passion or aversion, both are, passion and aversion are expressions of dependence, expressions of insecurity. For him, nothing in the, the jnani does not have any passion for anybody or anything in the world. Why? Because he is not dependent on anything in the world for his happiness. Nothing in the world for him is a source of happiness. Therefore, he is not dependent on anything for his happiness. Therefore, there is no dependence. Therefore, no passion for anything. Jnani does not have any, aversion also towards anything in the world, anybody in the world. I hate this person. I hate this person. I love this person. But no passion or no aversion towards anybody in the world. There's no aversion towards anything in the world. Why? Because nothing in the world is a source of unhappiness for a jnani. Nothing in the world can trigger, cause any unhappiness to him. For the one who is reveling in fullness, reveling in happiness, for the one for whom happiness, limitlessness, fullness is the very swarupam, how can anything in the world cause any unhappiness? Anything in the world can cause any sorrow, pain. When can you hate something? Only if you think this object, this person is responsible for my unhappiness, then I hate that person. I have aversion towards that person. Only if I think because of this person, I'm going through these problems, then that person becomes object of your hatred. Aversion is possible. Only if you think, if you think of some association of somebody, association of something, being around with that person will make me happy. If you're dependent on that person's association or thing, even listen to music, anything, object, a living being, a non-living thing, association or being with that makes me happy. If you are dependent on, then you have passion for that thing, object. So passion or aversion towards anything or anybody is very natural. It is possible only if you are dependent on the object for your happiness, that object becomes your object of passion, desire. If you think the object is responsible for unhappiness, that object becomes your object of hatred or aversion. But a wise person, already having recognized fullness as very swarupam, one who revels in fullness, one who is absolutely free from dependence, one who is not dependent on world or people or objects or situations for his happiness, there's nothing in the world is a source of happiness, nothing in the world is a source of unhappiness, therefore jnani has no passion or aversion towards anything in the world. In fact, Shastram sees this way. If you have any hatred towards anybody, you may have logically 100,000 reasons why I hate this person. What all problems this person created for me. Even if you give a big list, if you can explain, write a big 5 pages of notes you can write and give. Why I hate this person? No, what all he has done to me? You can write all these things. Shastram says, all those things may be relatively right. Relatively, they may be right. Really speaking, that person is not at all responsible for tinge responsibility that person doesn't have. Is not responsible at all for your unhappiness. Understand? When you are dependent on situations and people and things for your happiness, and that person, then you are disappointed. Similarly, happiness also, that the world is neither the source of happiness nor is it responsible for your unhappiness. That is when either attachment, passion or aversion or hatred towards anything is possible only when you lack here. It is expression of your lacking, expression of your sense of inadequacy, expression of your dependence, expression of your, insecurity. The jnani reveling in his vision of fullness is completely free from sense of inadequacy, insecurity, and jnani is free from emotional dependence. Therefore, he is free from passion and aversion towards anything. Therefore, he sees the relative difference between all these people. They're all not the same. Relatively, absolutely, all are one. They're all not equal, definitely. But still, all are one. He is not dependent on anybody. For him, everything is, nobody in the world is so responsible for my unhappiness. Nothing in the world can really cause any unhappiness to me. Therefore, Samabuddhir Visishyate. Anyway, so as I told you already, we have to remind yourself again the 5 topics I mentioned in the very beginning, the 5 topics discussed in this chapter. I said Bahiranga Sadhanani, the general disciplines which have to be observed consciously throughout one's life. In all ways they have to be followed in day-to-day experiences, in day-to-day life. No, when should you be thinking of being equanimous? Always. Always you have to be. That's why the Bahiranga Sadhanani, you have to practice seriously. You have to observe in your day-to-day life always. Once you wake up in the morning, until you go to bed, you have to remind yourself of Bahiranga Sadhanani. What are those Bahiranga Sadhanani? First, living a life of karma yoga, your living means samatvam, remaining, learning to remain the same, in always, every minute in my life, I have to remind myself, every time I'm tempted to react, I have to remind myself of the samatvam, remaining the calm, remaining the same in all situations, samatvam. Then definitely we always have to make possible effort, and we have to make use of your willpower, isn't it? That exercising, making one's own self-effort, one's own effort in terms of exercising one's willpower, which is also Bahiranga Sadhanam. Then I said, then disciplining all our senses. the body, mind, sense, having mastery over body, mind, sense complex, not allowing ourselves to become the slave of body, mind, sense complex, and the C, maintenance of the health, mental health, physical health, intellectual health, all these senses, and also having them integrated, being an integrated personality, isn't it? Integration of the body, mind, sense complex, and their maintaining the health. Third, Bahiranga Sadhanam. We saw that. Isn't it? We saw all those things. And then, and here, and finally we saw one more important thing is dispassion. Isn't it? Not craving for future, which implies not craving for any material ends. We need the material ends, we want the material ends, we need to plan out and work for accomplishing material ends, but we should not be craving for the material ends. No, that is what is dispassion, but also we saw there, which means we are not dependent on our material ends for our happiness. And we should never, never, never forget, always should remind ourselves of the moksha being the ultimate end, jnanam being the ultimate end, jnanam, all the time reminding yourself of the knowledge being the ultimate end, thereby being committed to that pursuit alone makes you a really spiritual person. Otherwise, there is no spirituality. So these Bahiranga Sadhanani are very important in order for any one to become a successful meditator. Without having these, you know, preparations, without observing these disciplines, one cannot be a meditator. One's meditation will not be a successful thing. Meditation is not at all possible. Other mind will be disturbed, isn't it? So, having said that, and this verse onwards, I told you all that Krishna does not give all this, you know, the in proper order. The 10th verse onwards, until the 14th, maybe until the 15th verse also, you can say, Krishna discusses Antaranga Sadhanani. Antaranga Sadhanani, these are not the disciplines to be observed always in day-to-day life, but these are the disciplines to be observed before one practices meditation. So, disciplines to be observed consciously, carefully, always. Why I should, if I know the value of following the disciplines, how important it is, moksha is for me, how important jnanam is for me, how important Bhagavan is for me, how to make my life a meaningful, successful one, irrespective of what I have achieved or not achieved, still as a human being, I can become an absolutely successful person if I can commit myself to the pursuit of knowledge. And for that jnanam, I need to have what? Contemplative disposition of the mind. And that mind is possible only if I make this all possible efforts in my day-to-day transactions in life, carefully, consciously, observe this Bahiranga Sadhanani. Okay? Now, 10th verse onwards, Krishna is now going to discuss the Antaranga Sadhanani, the specific disciplines to be observed before one practices the meditation. Many things will become very clear in this context. Okay, let us read this verse first. Yogi yunjita satatam. Yogi yunjita satatam atmanam atmanam rahasisthitah ekakiyata chittatma nirashira parigraha. So we'll read other verses later on. like this, 10th verse onwards, you know, the specific disciplines, and these specific disciplines, antaranga sadhanani, have to be observed before meditation, not always. So, before meditation, what are all the disciplines you have to observe? Okay, when you want to meditate, first of all, you should decide the place where I should sit and meditate. Isn't it? Deshaha, a place of meditation. The place you choose to sit for meditation. Number one. We'll see elaborately. Okay, Krishna is going to talk about all these things. Krishna mentions 8 factors, 8 steps here, 8 factors to be followed before one wants to meditate. The place. I want to meditate. You are not even very clear where you are going to sit and meditate. So, place of meditation. Deshaha. Is going to say, and when you meditate, the place must be definitely clean place. The clean means it must be a secluded place where you are not disturbed by others. You don't need a very posh place and all that. Krishna only says a secluded place where you are not disturbed by others. A secluded place. The place must be secluded. No, it must be clean. Clean means what? It should not be dusty and dirty. It should be in a tidy, clean place. So, suppose when you clean the place, it is physically, it becomes very clean and nice. But Krishna says, Shankara Bhagavata says, it also should be, you know, suitable for associating your mind with a spiritual thing, which means if you sit and meditate, a clean room, that there is a television in front of you, the television will remind you of, even though you are watching Astha Channel and Mahadev and all that, still sometimes the television has all sorts of programs and all the advertisements, and mind will go to that. So such things really are not associated with what? Isn't it? It's not spiritually clean, the place. So, make this, physically it must be tidy and clean. And also you can light a lamp, or you can make the place, you know, keep some Bhagavan's picture or something. So, make this place, maybe it can be a puja room also. So, spiritually clean, physically clean, tidy, isn't it? A clean place, secluded place. So, where you will not be disturbed. You sit for meditation also, you see, you don't have any companion there, you be alone. Be alone. So, it's all about the deshaha. Then, kalaha, when should I meditate? Where should I meditate? The choice of place, then choice of time. Kalaha, second factor you have to remember in meditation. When should I meditate? 4 o'clock in the evening after tea, or afternoon 1 o'clock, or maybe evening 8 o'clock before I go to bed? No. Definitely not. Know why? When you cold night, you sleep very well. Get up in the morning, where after rest, having rested the whole night, mind will be fresh. When the mind is fresh, even before the sun, no, the sun is about to rise, or before the sunrise, you know, that is sattvikaha kalaha brahma muhurtaha. Sattvika kala. Brahma muhurtaha, that is the time, there's a time appropriate for meditation. Why? Because as the day pauses, the sun becomes, you know, brighter and brighter. That is why we say even eat like a king in the breakfast. Why? Because the metabolism also is what? No. Listen, then as the day goes, and during the daytime, our body becomes very rajasic. Sun is brighter, above, and we become much more active physically, rajasic. Then as the day sun is about to set, as the day comes to an end, we become what? Slowly less and less dynamic, and slowly we come dull, tamasika kalaha. Listen now, tamasika kala, rajasika kala, sattvika kala. So brahme muhurte sattvike ushasi. Early in the morning, meditation is the best time for meditation. Kalaha. Okay. Desha, time of choice of place and choice of time. Kala. Then third factor. Asanam, seat. Big arrangement. Where should I sit? People go and buy all sorts of seats and they go to Kailash or Kashi. People buy and bring everything. They don't meditate afterwards. I bought this for meditation and this seat and that seat. People arrange so much, but they don't meditate, practice any meditation. I don't know. So here, what should be the seat of meditation? Asanam. Now Krishna definitely says, a seat must be, should not be too hard, too soft also, cozy. You'll go, especially in UK, the cold weather, you'll go and fall asleep. It not be too soft, too hard, too high also should not be, too low also should not be. It must be adequately soft, isn't it? And here Krishna himself gives, have three layers, a seat of three layers. What are they? Have kushagras, a layer of kushagras, and then you have ajinam, the deer skin, then have a piece of cloth. Immediately our people will come and ask what, oh, where can I go and get the deer skin? What is it? Immediately they'll ask, whatever is impossible, difficult to, they'll ask, as if very much interested and I'm not able to get the deer skin, so I can't practice meditation, you know. Only Krishna's period he said that. Now we have something like this, see, which is as good as deer skin, okay? Deer skin you don't need to search for, something equivalent which will help make your seat comfortable, okay? It doesn't, that's why it should not be too hard, too soft, too low, too high, means it, the seat must be soft. Even though the kushagra, you know, the kushagras, you know, is, it has a very sharp blade and sharp edge. And the sharpness of kushagras in Vedic tradition is always, you know, taken to be something very auspicious. And even the sharp, the person of sharp intellect is said to be kushagra buddhihi, the man of sharp intellect. Now we call him kushagra buddhi, isn't it? The buddhi is of three types. The person, the kol buddhi, the person of kol buddhi, the person of plant and stem buddhi, the person of, you know, camphor buddhi. Camphor buddhi, kol buddhi, plant and stem buddhi means what? The camphor buddhi now quickly catches fire. That is uttama adhikari. And madhyama adhikari is what now? Like a coal. It does, you know, catch fire, but it takes some time. But plant and stem, I don't know whether people in UK would have seen that or not. Plant and stem, vale thunder. No, it will never get any catch fire. Not only that, it will put out the fire. Isn't it? That is called adama adhikari. So here, what I want to say, such, no, so here, that's why we don't, the kushagra buddhi, he means one who is of sharp intellect. Anyway, so this kushagras, because its edge is sharp edge, and it is always taken to be something auspicious. Okay, so nowadays in Kashi, wherever you go, people make nice darba grass, kusha grass mats they are selling. Anyway, still it will cause some sort of a prick. So that's why on the top have ajina, means the deer skin. if DSK is not available, don't go for hunting and all, and don't try to phone hunters who are available in the whichever jungle that may get. And people always go online, okay, and search for where can I get Kushagra, the ajinam, the tiger skin, sorry, deer skin and all that. Deer skin, okay. Anyway, the deer skin is something very auspicious. Again, this has to be, you know, on different occasions and all that. That is a different thing. But here, and also on the top, a soft cloth. Which the idea is, the seat must be soft and you put it in a clean place where the things in the place help you associate with the teaching, the shastram. The mind doesn't, it not provoked by some other things. Now let me go and find in my, you know, I have a clean lounge, I have a big kitchen diner. We go and sit there, means all our fresh, you know, the cakes and bakes and then all this pizza smell only will come to our mind. Therefore, definitely the place of choice must be not the kitchen, not the dining hall, not the hall where you are, or your the things in the hall will provoke your, you know, other disturb you, create disturbing thoughts. Sit in a place where your mind will be reminded of Bhagavan, Shastram, subject matter you heard, etc. Okay, that's the place, time, and asanam. We have said third is the asanam. Ka deshaha kalaha asanam. Then when you sit for meditation, the posture of the physical body, how should you sit? Isn't it? Definitely, when you sit in meditation, the samam kaya shiro grivam, the head, the neck, and the body, trunk, they all must be in one straight line. When you straighten means don't make it stiff and tensed, you can be relaxed. So keeping one's body, mind, sorry, body, head, and it, no, neck, all the three must be in one straight line, relaxed. That is, sharira, no, sharira sthitihi. It is, we say, we call it the posture, physical posture in meditation, fourth factor, you have to remember. It's all by antaranga sadhanam. Comes under antaranga sadhanam, isn't it? So, deshaha, kalaha, asanam, sharira sthitihi. Then, when you're sitting, after you sit also, you see, you take care of your breath. Focus your mind on your breath and see that your inhalation and exhalation are, you know, they are rhythmic. The prana should be in rhythm. There must be rhythm of the prana, inhalation, exhalation. It's called prana samyam. Rhythmic breathing. Well, we don't need to practice pranayama, and I'm not asking you to do that. When you sit, suppose you might have come in a hurry and you must come like that. Once you sit, take time to see that inhalation and exhalation are, you know, they maintain the rhythm of the inhalation and exhalation is maintained. Why? Because the pranas are associated with your thoughts. Thoughts. The prana is not in rhythm. The rhythm of the prana, the inhalation, exhalation is not maintained. Then there will be disturbance in the thoughts. There's a connection, isn't it? So, prana is associated with your power of activity. Thoughts are associated with the power of knowledge. So, thoughts are associated with jnana shaktihi, power of knowledge. The pranas are associated with power of activity, kriya shaktihi. And these both are connected to what? Maya shaktihi. Therefore, there is an interconnection between prana and the thoughts. In the prana, there is no samyam, there is no, the prana is not in proper, they are not in same they're not in same condition, then the thoughts also will be disturbed. That's why always pranayama helps you to even discipline your thoughts sometimes, the thought flow. Therefore, when you sit for meditation, focus your mind on your prana, see that you are not gasping or anything, because you must have come for prana running or jumping. So when you come here and see that the rhythm of the inhalation, exhalation is in good condition, proper condition. Okay, that is pranasamyam, next factor. The next is indriya nigraha. Indriya nigraha means, suppose when you sit in meditation, you have chosen the place, you are sitting early in the morning, you have sitting on a proper seat, and you know your physical posture is perfect. Now you have taken care of your breathing, they're all in proper rhythm. And what happens? Your sense organs are all open like this. Now Krishna, this time the objects perceived definitely can disturb your thought flow. What should you do? You, like an auto suggestion, tell yourself, now you know the value of meditation, therefore you want to focus your mind in the object of meditation, which means attention of the mind is totally required here. Therefore, I'm not going to be with any of the senses. Okay? Actually, meditation is the time for self-appointment. Appointment with so many people. We fix the appointments with so many people. We give your time for other people. Whether they pay you or they don't pay you. But here, you have to have self-appointment, which means the time is only for yourself. What you do here, the senses, you turn the sense organs, turning one senses away from the sense objects. With this, prayer, auto-suggestion, by withdrawing the mind from the senses, turning away one senses from sense objects through the withdrawal of the mind is called indriya nigraha. Then next is mano nigraha. You have withdrawn, and in indriya nigraha, you have to remember one thing, you can't fold your ear lobes. That will be kept open. The most distracting, the disturbing sensor is what now? Eye, isn't it? Suppose it is easy to not to think of food, the object of tongue, or smell, or sounds, you can take away, or even touch. The eyes, if you keep your eyes open, eyes can, in spite of your effort also, eyes can take your mind to one object to another object. You see one small thing here, and this will, who gave this gift for me? Somebody else gave. And that person's house, where is it? Like that, mind can be taken from one thing to another thing. Mind can take any distance. That is why, the eyes, okay? The eyes are called nayanam. Eye is called nayanam. Nayanam means that which leads the mind. Eye seeing power is only here. Staying here, reporting the object in front of you, it can make the mind go anywhere. That's why eye is called nayanam. Therefore, definitely, in indriya nigraha, only Bhagavan has given lids, only for the eyes, closable lids, isn't it? Therefore, keep your eyes closed. Closed in meditation. Okay, closing your eyes means, so you have turned your senses away from sense objects by withdrawing your attention of the mind from the senses. This is Indriya Nigraha. When you close your eyes, how should you close your eyes? You know, don't close tight like this. Or by closing nicely, slowly you will fall asleep. Don't close completely. Don't keep the eyes wide open also. How should you close? Close your eyes half. Closing your eyes half means what? You see the floor in front of you. If you see the floor in front of you, then eyes become as though closed fully. But they still, they are not closed. It will give you the, it will look as though you are watching the tip of the nose. But remember, you are not watching the tip of the nose. If you see the tip of the nose, you will have severe headache, you will develop 1.5 eye then. But it's not watching the tip of the nose, but you're only half closing. You're only seeing the place in front of you. Understand? Which means eyes look as though closed, but not fully closed. Understand? Keep it. This is Indriya Nigraha. Then we go to Mano Nigraha. When do you have to observe this? Before you sit for meditation. Remember them. That's why they're called specifications to be followed before you sit for meditation. Don't take it for granted. It's a serious instruction. I'm not telling. Krishna is giving 5-4 verses, 4.5 verses. He's sparing for that. The next is what? Mano Nigraha. Mano Nigraha means, again, here, the mind, when you sit for meditation, as I already told in the very beginning, because mind is, you know, not in mind, all the other appointments are cancelled, and having only self-appointment, when mind is not preoccupied, mind is completely free from preoccupations, because there's a decision to sit for meditation, that is when all the emotions will come up. Where do they come from? Don't worry. They're all abundance of emotions sitting in your subconscious. We don't know when you collected them, accumulated them. Mother Janma or this Janma, we do not know. All your anxiety, fear, you know, anger and hate, whatever things, all people who you don't like, make all those things will come up. The emotions will come and disturb you. Isn't it? That is why, otherwise, worry will come. When you are not preoccupied, I tell you, we can write and give. When you are very busy doing something or the other, you forget your so-called problems. When we are not busy, that is when something, anything which really worries you, that will come to your mind. Oh my God, my child has gone to the university. Every day I used to make for her nice juice in the morning. I don't know what she is eating. I don't know whether she ate or not. Hope she hasn't gone out anywhere at 8 o'clock in the night. Hope she's home. All sorts of things in the hostel, what she's doing. All sorts of things come. Is it like that? Only example I'm giving. I tell you like this, anything, any worry can come to our mind. Isn't it? Disturbance. Therefore, we have to say, this time is not for, it is auto-suggestion is very important. We are not Mahatmas already, isn't it? We are all working hard to become Mahatmas anyway. So, this time, I am sitting for meditation. Let all the worries, all the problems, all the appointments, everything be away. This is the time for me to be with myself. So, So self-appointment time, with this auto-suggestion, now withdrawal of mind from all your objects of concern is what? Mano-nigraha. There is a prayer auto-suggestion is important. And not only that, such disturbances when they come, in fact, it's better to pray also. You have to remember the fact, you know, everyone in this world has come with one's own prarabdha, including your children. The children are not only born through you, not of you. Children are not born of you, born through you. So you have no say over certain things. You can have concern for them, affection for them, care for them, do the needful. Above all, you know, you cannot change their prarabdha. Pray for them, you know, wish them well, leave them. Do the needful, leave them, wish them well and leave them. Not only that, so like that anything may be there. So here, sometimes anything in, not only children, I'm just giving the example of children because that's the most, you know, the things which we, the parents, the things which worry the parents, always the children, things concerning the children. So what I want to say here is, anything, it can be money or finance or other problems or family or relatives or acquaintances or office, whatever is the thing which worries you, that can come and disturb, there I do not have any individual's behavior. Anything really is response for this worry, for me to go through this pain or worry, really is only nimittam to trigger this already the emotion which is in me. They are not really responsible for the emotions to come now. They're only their behavior or their things are only triggering instruments. They trigger, you know, the instrumental in triggering the emotions which are already there. They only surface. Why they come are parabdha. Okay. Therefore, with this understanding, therefore, seek Bhagavan's grace. Oh Lord, please give me the strength not to be disturbed by all these things. May I focus on your Swarupam. Now, with this prayer, with the auto-suggestion, keep them away and take the mind, attention of the mind from all those things which really disturb you. This is Mano-nigraha. Then, finally, I think I have said seven. What is the last factor? No? Nischita buddhihi or buddhi nischayaha. What is your conviction of the necessity, the importance, the of benefit of meditation? Going to practice meditation means it is not something meaningless, waste of time. Meditation definitely is important, it is necessary, and it is effective. I have no doubt at all that meditation, will it be efficacious or not? If I practice meditation, will it be effective or not? Before people want to know, but give guarantee, somebody has to say, yes, definitely it is effective. No. When Shastram says, I understand, meditation is effective. Meditation definitely will help me have the clear, doubt-free, ascertained vision of the truth being my Swarupam. Or my Swarupam being the truth. Okay? Meditation is effective. That conviction also you must have. Isn't it? Otherwise, what meditation can you practice without any conviction? is simplicity, because somebody told you, no, so I'm also sitting in the meditation. Let me practice meditation. I don't know whether it be useful or not. I don't know whether it be effective or not. It means it is not, you know. Then, without not knowing the value, how efficacious meditation is, if you sit for meditation, you will be disturbed. I'm wasting my time here. I have to do so many things. You'll think it's a waste of time. My God. Therefore, conviction about the meditation being highly efficacious. These are the 8 factors which we have to remember before we sit for meditation. These are called what? Antaranga sadhanani. And they are all going, now without the verses, I have told you. Now we are going to see the same in these verses.
Yogi yunjita satatam. Yogi yunjita satatam. Atmanam rahasisthitaha. Atmanam rahasisthitaha. Ekakiyata chittatma nirashira parigraha.
So yogi here means meditator. Yunjita means may the meditator meditate. Yunjita means must meditate. How should a meditator meditate? Not irregularly, not once in a while. If the meditation has to be effective, he must practice it every day regularly. Satatam, even simple walking, if we go means every day we must be going. Once in a while, not where it's okay. Otherwise, I go, you know, last month I was going for walking, you know, 2 days. And whole month I never went. Again, this month one day. That is not regular exercise, isn't it? Anything you do, anything you do must be done regularly for it to be effective. So, yogi satatam yunjita. May the meditator meditate regularly. How? Atmanam means, meditate means what? How should you meditate? What should you apply in meditation? Legs and hands or head or what? Mind. So, atmanam yunjita. Yogi satatam atmanam yunjita. It's a complete sentence. May the meditator meditate regularly, applying the mind. Atmanam here means mind. Applying your mind. May the meditator meditate applying his mind. In fact, should regularly. Then, immediately from there he goes to what? He mentions the place of meditation. Rahasi sthitaha. Remaining in a secluded place. Rahasi means remaining alone in a secluded place. Simple, I already told you. Ekaki. At least in meditation, physically you must be alone, mentally also you must be alone. No, physically I go alone, mentally I carry my first son and my first grandson and second, you know. Imagine, that is why better. If suppose twice mad again, all of them will come. Problems, isn't it? That is why all of them will carry. And sometimes even the pets also will come. Therefore here, ekaki, Physically you be there alone. Mentally also be alone. Don't carry anything else with you. Have only Bhagavan with you or Shastram with you. That's the meaning. Ekaki. This is Yata Chitta Atma. In a secluded place, alone. When you go there, how you go? Yata means disciplined, chittam minder, atma body. Having as a disciplined minded and bodied. Having the disciplined mind and body, may one be there. It means not obliging what your mind says or the body asks for, ignoring all that, you know, I feel very thirsty now. So already finished drinking, don't have such biological disturbances. When you go for meditation, finish everything so that you have disciplined body and mind. Yata chitta atma. Then nirashihi. See, ashihi means ashaha, desires. But nirashihi means being free from binding desires. Devoid of binding desires. What do you mean by binding desires? Isn't it? That any desire which causes anxiety is a binding desire. Anxiety causing desire is a binding desire. See, desires are natural, isn't it? When you go for meditation, that, you know, nirashihi means always a meditator should take care of his desires all the time. We already said. But here, nirashihi means this person is free from binding desires. There are desires legitimate, isn't it? So, non-binding desires. So, desires which really contribute for mental anxiety is called binding disease. So, nirashihi means, you know, with not being subject to, be disturbed by the binding anxiety causing desires, nirashihi, because very important for a meditator to have that disposition. See, even preparation for meditation itself says so much. Why? Because how serious a meditation is. Imagine. People think go for some resort or somewhere and see resort center and pay some money, stay for 1 week and then have some vegetarian food or have some simple food and then have some music and then some people think we go for meditation retreats. What retreat? What retreat? Meaningless retreats. Isn't it? You can go for have fun. You may be relaxed, but don't call it a meditation retreat. There is no meditation without having cleansed yourself of all these things. Isn't it? Nothing wrong. Everything is very natural. But if you want to be successful in accomplishing what you want to accomplish, you have to have the meditative disposition. And for that disposition, you have to meditate. And for you to be a successful meditator, you need to have the meditative disposition of the mind. And that has all these prerequisites to take care. Where is the meditation otherwise? So he says here, nirashihi aparigraha. Aparigraha, nirasihi means being, we have to take care of that the desires we entertain in our mind are non-binding desires. They do not cause any anxiety in us. Then, parigraha means possession. Aparigraha means non-possession. So, being free from sense of possessiveness. In fact, it is very natural for us to feel possessive of many things. we do have some possessions. So naturally we think we are not possessive. We are possessive of this. There's a sense of possession of the assets we have. And the children, isn't it? I can't really help. Because children are our possession. We are so possessive of our children, so possessive of our assets. Nothing wrong. But what Krishna says, over-possessiveness will always cause anxiety. And isn't it? Then it will result in mental disturbance. This is where we have to remember, to be frank, you have to remember this fact. What is this fact? Really speaking, there is nothing which is a permanent possession here. This house will be there, everything will be there, we will be gone after some time. Isn't it? What is that our possession here? So nothing is permanent. And the second thing, even our body, mind, sense complex is given to us. Similarly, in keeping with our punyam, the house we enjoy, the property we enjoy, the wealth we enjoy, children we enjoy also Bhagavan's prasada, Bhagavan's gift. Everything, anything which is there as your possession has been given to you by Bhagavan. Everything, because you deserve it, you have got it. Nothing, anything you are given, what you are enjoying as your possession, really that is gift from Bhagavan. Bhagavan's grace has given to you in keeping with what you deserve as a result of your own punyam. Nothing you got it easily. You deserve it, you got it. Therefore, you are now allowed to enjoy as long as you are allowed to be here. Therefore, our sense of belonging to everything must be how? Not as mine, I have to look after it like that. Everything has been given to me, so I am like a managing trustee here. I can enjoy, benefit, look after, leave. This is a fact. This we should remember this fact also. Everybody is not given everything. Whatever is given to you is really Bhagavan's grace. You deserve it. Nothing will come to you unless you have Bhagavan's grace. Anugraha, Bhagavat Prasada. Somewhere, some punyam you had, you deserve it, you got it. But definitely you can't be holding on to it forever also. There's a time and then you'll be forced to leave this. Therefore, this is a meaningless thing. You have to remember this. One thing you have to remember, always, the simple living is always emphasized for high thinking. Simple living does not mean you should go and live in a dungeon or somewhere. Simple living in high thinking implies what? Avoidance of luxury, isn't it? You can have everything comfortable, everything can be comfortable, but doesn't mean it should be luxurious. The more luxury you have in life, to maintain the luxury, the more possessions you have, the more, you have, comforts you have, more you have, the more you have to maintain also. So accumulation, acquisition should always be followed by maintenance, and which will cause disturbance. That is why here you can have everything, but in the mind, that does not mean give away everything and become a pauper, stand on the roadside. No. Mentally become non-possessive. Own the house, mentally become a non-possessor. How can I become the non-possessor? Owning the house, having the house, enjoying the house, having children, enjoying having family, enjoying everything, possessing everything also, you can become the non-possessor by entertaining the thought. Everything I'm enjoying has been ordained by Bhagavan in the form of law as prasada. I'm allowed to enjoy this thanks to Bhagavan, and everything is Bhagavan's and nothing is permanent here for me, because this body is not permanent. Everything I enjoy is not permanent. Therefore, I am like a managing trustee. I can enjoy, maintain, then leave. This attitude also must be there so that you won't be disturbed. See, all these and attitudes and thinking will help you avoid, you know, the mental disturbances. We have not yet completed the 8 factors which you have already understood. We are going to elaborately see all those 8 factors which we have seen today in the following verses. We'll continue tomorrow. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavasishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Tat Sat Sri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.